we're going to close on something here, non-alcohol or tea related.
I don't know what to say.
Yeah, what do you say at that point?
I have no material. If those things are off the table, I don't have any material.
It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 196. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. First up, Matt and I talk about whether BYU fans are too vicious on Twitter and whether they're really that different than other college football fans. We dive into the football camp, fall camp storylines, including Jamal Williams' absence, Nate Carter's possible emergence, and Tanner Mangum's as the foregone conclusion as the backup quarterback. We also preview the BYU defense, looking at the depth chart, and looking at the players we think will make the most impact this season. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout and listen to us right now. Rise and Shout Podcast, Matt, welcome back.
Oh, it's good to be back. Good to be back, my friend.
There were a few suggestions by fans that Jerem should replace you permanently.
Listen, are any of us surprised by this?
No. Least of all me.
Come on now.
Least of all me. So, Matt, we welcome you back. We're going to dive into fall camp and stuff. And, I'm excited. I'm excited to talk about those things. But before we get there, we need to talk about something else.
What?
I've become aware of a new, I don't know if it's just East Coast, Burger 21.
Oh, yes.
I've
yes,
yet to
my
be
friend.
There, but I'm going to go there, I believe, tomorrow. Where does this rank in your pantheon of burger places?
It's pretty good.
Higher than Five Guys? In and Out?
It's not the same as In-N-Out. I don't put In-N-Out and Five Guys in the same category, by the way.
Oh, and because one is really, really delicious and the other one is mediocre? Yeah, I understand that.
Is it better than Five Guys? I would take Burger 21 over In-N-Out.
Okay.
And I think the shakes are better at Burger 21.
Mm. Are there shakes at Five Guys?
There aren't.
Oh, well, then they're definitely better.
Actually, I've heard that there are a couple locations now serving shakes, but I don't think it's a system-wide thing.
Yes, not system-wide.
Does Burger 21 beat Five Guys?
Yes, that's what I've asked. Just answer the question, you pansy.
You know what? I'll tell you this. I had the Tex-Mex Haystack there last time I was at Burger 21. It'd be tough to beat that at Five Guys. It'd be tough to beat.
Mm. My favorite burger right now is the Twin Cities Burger at Smash Burger.
Oh, you're gonna enjoy Burger 21.
Because I am, well, I mean, I like burgers.
Have you been to The Counter?
I have not been to The Counter.
Also kind of an Eastern thing. I think there's one near where you are.
I will also look into that because burgers are delicious.
Burgers, yes, they are.
Are delicious. So on the Twin Cities burger, Matt, it's very greasy, which is what makes it good.
I like it already.
Swiss and cheddar cheese. It's very delicious. And some onions. Fried onions. Grilled onions, I'm sorry, not fried. Grilled onions. Very good. All right, anyway, let's talk football.
Or, a little bit of the foosball.
Actually, no, let's not talk football first. Let's first head to the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
First up on Cougars in the News, Matt. National writer who I really enjoy his stuff, Dan Wolken. I believe he is a columnist for the USA Today. And he said on Salt Lake City Radio that the BYU fans are one of the most vicious set out there on the Twitterverse, Matt. So, Matt, tell me this. Do you think BYU fans are more or less vicious when it comes to social media or in the stands than your average college football fan?
I do feel like there is a very vocal group of BYU fans on Twitter.
Yes, certainly.
And they have, there is a segment of that group that has a real complex with national writers.
Yes, anytime they get what they see as any kind of a diss, they go pretty crazy. But the article in question is Wolkin's article about Taysom Hill's summer internship and basically how Taysom Hill is, you know, preparing for either a career in the NFL or a career elsewhere. But did you find anything objectionable in that article?
No.
I read it. I don't know what the big issue was, but I didn't think there was I didn't think that was a bad thing. It was just, hey, you know, it's one of those puff pieces that sports writers write about college football.
This guy's really smart, and he's studying finance. And if football doesn't work out, he's going to be able to get a really good job.
Yes, yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if BYU fans in general are any more or less vicious than average. I think they're pretty average when it comes to that behavior. The loud minority exists in a lot of programs, though. A lot of,
you know, when you look at, like, if you follow a guy like Kirk Herbstreit on Twitter, right? I mean, he's getting hammered all the time, and he'll take, and every once in a while he'll get into a little, you know, he'll respond to several of those at once.
Yes.
You know, I think these guys take a lot of heat. People, you know, nobody feels like the national guy really understands our program. Or in Kirk Herbstreit's case, it's, you know, you love this program or that program, and that's why you hate us. You know, you're loyal to Ohio State or whatever, right? So I mean, but that's going to be true. Every program's got that.
Yes. Every program thinks, and it's true though, right? But that's the whole thing that kind of annoys me sometimes, quite frankly, is of sports fans is, well, they don't understand. Of course they don't understand, like the guy covering your team or you do. They don't watch every second of every game. They don't read every article.
They're also not emotionally attached.
No. They're definitely – Dan Wolkin is not emotionally attached to the BYU football program. So, anywho, also in the news, not good news, Matt. This is kind of breaking news. We're recording this Wednesday night, and this came to light just a few hours ago. BYU police have brought criminal charges against Sione Takitaki, sophomore linebacker. He will be suspended, according to, I'm reading straight out of the Salt Lake Tribune, and I believe it's a friend of the podcast, Jay Drew's reporting. He will be suspended for game one. Matt, we'll get to the defense here in a minute. We're previewing the defense later on the podcast. Effect of Takitaki being out against that in the game against the Cornhuskers.
Well, I don't know if I'm as worried about him missing that particular game as I am the fact that, I mean, I think he may be done.
Oh, you think so?
I don't think we're going to see Takitaki again.
Really? Huh.
This is a guy that last year, before he was even, you know, before football even started, got in a fight on campus, was kicked off the team, and then they convinced Mendenhall, he convinced Mendenhall to give him another shot and that he would be all right.
This is not the way you fulfill that getting another shot.
This is not the way you do that, especially when you look at, you know, what it is that he's accused of doing. I mean, that's in the building.
Yes.
You know, against the athletic department.
I know.
I mean, it's such a strange situation. And for a guy who's already been given a second chance, you know, I look at that and I wonder if we're going to see him again. You know, so when you think about the impact of that, right, you look across this group of linebackers, and I think this Takitaki was the guy I think we were expecting to make an impact.
Yes.
And there's some room at the linebacker position to get into a situation to make some impact.
I think he was considered the favorite for that weak linebacker position, and we'll get into the defensive preview here in a minute, but I think that there's a lot of linebackers on the team, but I don't know if the quality is great. So this hurts. This hurts, I think. So, Matt, let's jump into football fall camp stuff. The first news is also not great news, though I think at least it's turned out okay. Colby Jorgensen, a sophomore linebacker, hurt his neck in practice. This was a couple days ago. He had emergency surgery, And according to his older brother, everything went pretty well. So our prayers and thoughts go out to Colby and his family. And I know, according to the article in the Daily Herald, I think he had gotten married like a week before this, like a week and a half ago. So,
oh, wow.
Anyway, we'll get all that. We've got one more bad news thing coming up because we haven't talked about this. It's not news, but any reaction to Jamal Williams out for 2015?
That's devastating.
Yes,
that's a devastating loss.
Okay,
you know, we've talked about the possible impact if Jamal goes down or if Taysom gets hurt, and I think we all understand that this is a game changer for this offense and for this team.
Yes,
if you look at the gauntlet of a schedule that they're about to run through in September, to lose Jamal at this point and who they have behind him, this is a bad situation.
So Taysom Hill last season carried the ball 87 times in a little less than 5 games. Okay? Now, if you take out the sacks, it's more like, you know, maybe 70-something, right? A lot of people were figuring that his carries would go down this year. I don't think that's going to be the case. Do you? Now?
No, I definitely not now. And I think this does is this increases the chances that we see that Mangum handing off to Hill combo.
I you know, people are talking about that. It'll be interesting to see if they do put them both on the field a couple times this year in different situations. It'll be interesting to see. What I will say, the other part that worries me a little bit for Taysom's health is Jamal and him were both, I think Taysom is actually a better short yardage runner, but they were the two short yardage people on the team. They were the two that if you had a third and one or a fourth and one of the two of them is going to be carrying the ball. I don't know if there's enough, I have enough confidence in the other guys in this roster that you would hand them the ball at fourth and one.
No.
So now you've made your short yardage situations very one-dimensional unless Algie Brown or somebody can become that short yardage threat.
But who is it? Is it Algie Brown? Is that who they try and mold into that?
I don't know. But related news, Matt, and this is something I have been pumping since late last year. KSL ran a story about Nate Carter this week and the walk-on willingness to basically do everything. He's 5'9". They list him at 185 pounds. I'd be surprised if he was weighed quite that much. But, you know, he did get some carries last year, but only, let's see, I had it right here. Nate Carter had 46 carries. That's not that few. Averaged 6.3 yards per carry. Matt, am I crazy to think that Nate Carter should be getting maybe the second most touches out of the backfield in 2015?
I don't think it's crazy, but I think I'm not quite on the Nate Carter bandwagon just yet.
Oh,
you
know, I'm on it.
You look at some of the situations he was in and some of the, where he picked up a lot of those carries. I'm not quite aboard. But when I look at the list, I think I don't see anybody head and shoulders above where I think Carter is.
Well, and you know, I talked about this during spring when Jamal wasn't playing. It's nothing against Adam Hine and Algie Brown. Hopefully they prove me wrong. I just don't see either of them as a feature back. I think all Carter, Brown, maybe even Trey Dye, Carter, I mentioned Carter already, Hine, I think a lot of people in fall camp and even maybe into the season, this is going to be a rotational where there's not going to be a Jamal as far as workload is concerned. Do you think that's fair? Or do you think they'll eventually settle on somebody who will get, you know, of the non-Taysom carries will get 60% of them?
No, I think this is running back by committee.
I think you are correct. I think you are correct. Well, Matt, the backup quarterback battle is interesting because last week Jerem was on the program and he said there is no backup quarterback battle. He says it's Tanner Mangum, period. Okay. So he has looked impressive so far. People There was a Jeff Call of the Deseret News had a piece this week about how impressed people were with him. Of course, he's the all-everything high school quarterback, but he is, of course, just right off his mission. Percent chance, Matt, Tanner Mangum is the person that gets a snap if Taysom Hill were to get hurt or needed a series off.
Right now, I feel like it's 100%. I mean, Bronco Mendenhall used the word love like 5 times.
Yeah.
I mean, he loves him.
Yes. I'm with you. I think it's 99%. So Tanner Mangum, I mean, do you think he will get many chances to be on the field if Taysom's healthy?
Yes, because I think they're going to get real creative with what they do in the backfield. And I think they're going to run some lineups, some formation where they put both of them on the field at the same time.
So they're not.
I don't know if they do it in Nebraska. I don't know how soon they do it, but I think that's coming. And I'd even rule out that Hogue gets involved in that because he's pretty fast.
Yeah.
It could get real crazy back there.
Yes, it could get very crazy. So you think there's no chance Tanner Mangum redshirts in 2015?
No chance.
If we had more quarterback depth, I would disagree with you, but I can't disagree with you. And it pains me not to disagree with you.
Yeah, and I might feel differently about it if we had more running back depth.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to get crazy. We're going to see some weird stuff.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we will see some weird stuff. I thought if Jamal was healthy, you wouldn't see as much of that. But I think that there is a domino effect here with Jamal. On Yahoo.com, Matt, 25 most intriguing quarterbacks, whatever that really actually means. Pat Ford of Yahoo.com. Clickbait it was, but coming in at only number 20 is Taysom Hill. I look at this list ahead of him. I am a college football fan, obviously also a BYU homer. I find him to be much higher on this list than 20, but again, it's most intriguing, which is highly subjective. It's not necessarily the best, Pat says, or the most popular. It's the most intriguing, and that's all he gives as far as criteria. Matt, what do you think? Should we go on a flame war against Pat Ford on Twitter?
Absolutely.
And say he's at least top 15 most intriguing.
At least top 17 most intriguing.
Yeah.
But if you look at some of the stories that he's got up in these higher ranks, you know what I mean? I think you could make argument that I could get Taysom up into the top 15 of this list pretty easily as far as what I'd see are intriguing or interesting stories to follow in college football.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You get much higher than that, and there's some pretty interesting stuff in here, especially if you get up into the top five, you know.
Well, the
top two are both quarterbacks at Ohio State.
Right, and I don't know if you saw this week, but ESPN did where they're going around to a bunch of different fall camps.
Mm-hmm.
And they interviewed Cardale Jones and JT Barrett, okay? And apparently they're like best friends. And JT Barrett said if he was getting married next weekend, Cardale Jones would be one of the guys standing there, okay? It's fascinating. And you get another former Big Ten offensive MVP who's switching from quarterback to wide receiver.
Yeah.
And you know, Boykin, obviously, Trevon Boykin at TCU is intriguing. I also think he's got on this list whoever ends up being the starter at Michigan, right?
Yeah, that's number 14.
Yeah, so when it's intriguing, I don't know that I can actually disagree with him because there doesn't seem to be any actual criteria. Like you said, clickbait. But I did find the article. Despite that, I actually found it interesting as a college football fan. So Matt, this was a kind of weird piece. It didn't actually, a friend of the podcast, Darnell Dixon in the Daily Herald, talks about biggest positional battles, though he didn't actually rank the positional battles. He went position by position and talked about some of the folks. Are there any positional battles you're particularly paying attention to?
Right now, I feel like it's running backs.
Yeah, running back's a big one. What else?
I probably, you know, there is some interesting stuff in the defensive backfield.
Yes.
You know, there's a couple places there where I'd be interested to see how it shakes out. You look at like Nacua and Badger.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a lot of fun. You know, Takanaka. There's a couple guys here where you're like, we could see something interesting, and you know, maybe we have something here, or maybe we've got nothing.
Yeah.
But there are hopefully some interesting competition.
Speaking of potential running backs, Matt, Harvey Lange, I mentioned him as a potential running back, though there seems to be no indication of him switching back to running back, which he did at the University of Utah before his mission. Another big position battle is Lange and Pakula.
Yep.
I don't know who's... I think Warner's got that strong side, it seems like, reading the tea leaves here, and that's herbal tea leaves, by the way.
Yeah, can you read tea leaves?
Herbal ones, you can. I think he's got that lined up. The rest of the linebacker part, and let's just assume for a minute that Taki is still in the program, I think they're up for grabs. I don't think anybody's got, besides Warner, anyone's got a position nailed down. So that'll be interesting on the linebacker side.
Yeah, but you know what? That makes me nervous. Is it true because it's just they're all good and the competition is close? Or is this a situation where nobody's really quite there yet?
I think it may be a combination of both. I think there's talent there, but is Lange, can he put it together? I mean, he showed some great signs, but he also seemed a little fish out of water last year, which is one of the reasons why I suggested after this Jamal Williams leaving the program for a year was announced.
You might want to put him back in the backfield.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, he was a significant recruit as a running back, and I understand why they moved him. And the other problem with moving Lange that people pointed out to me on Twitter, which I had already thought of, but the problem is you got Squally Canada and Jamal for 2016. So what's Lange going to do when you've got two feature backs? Switch back to linebacker again? That seems
Yeah, if I were him, I
ridiculous.
Wouldn't want to do that.
No, no. If I'm him, I'm going to fight and try to get one of these and sit in one of these starting linebacker spots for a couple years. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
I wish Squally could play this year.
I know. I know. It would solve a lot of the running back issues, potentially. Let's reach out to the tweet bag, Matt.
Tweet bag.
On the tweet bag, Justin Sweeney, that's at Justin D. Sweeney. This is related to positional battles, Matt. After the trick kicks in summer, I'm surprised, he says, at Johnny Rugby's struggle so far. Can he get the punter job down by opening day? Matt, Linehan does not seem, the early reports are not great on him as a punter. Is Johnny Rugby, is he going to be the punter against Nebraska?
I think he will be, but I think it's going to be a mess.
I don't like having punters who are a mess.
Yep.
I'm not a big fan of punters that are a mess. Hmm.
I think we're going to see some miscues on special teams.
You're making me sick. Don't say that.
I'm not making you sick. The special teams are making you sick.
Oh, they are nice, nice. That's very clever. Very clever. You know, at least Samson, we've got the kicker decided, right? You got a returning kicker. Man, I'm going to miss having a punter who can put it where we want him to put it. It's a much bigger weapon than I think people give it credit for, right? All those jokes about that punters aren't football players.
And they're not.
And they're not. But they are very valuable. They're very valuable. So, I don't know, man. I don't know.
I just feel like special teams is going to be a little bit of an adventure.
Yeah, and we lost some of our good guys who played coverage and things too. So we shall see. Yep. Matt, John Brame on Twitter, that's at Johnny Dangerman, asks, a lot of love this offseason for fat guys at skill positions.
Oh, yeah.
Does BYU have any players who could swing something like that? Is there a player, Matt, on the BYU roster that you would like to see, and I mean a guy pushing over 275, okay, who you would like to see play a skill position?
Is there a guy I'd like to see pushing over 275?
Or should we do at least 300? Or do you think
I'm too high? I think to keep it interesting, you got to say 300.
Okay, let's say 300. Anybody over 300 that you would like to see play in a skill position?
Ooh, there's not, off the top of my head, I'm going to go ahead and say that there's not. I mean, you know, I think you look at some of these guys in the listen, but hey, I've got to think about this for a second, because if you look at some of these guys that you're talking about that are getting some of this national attention, you know, you're looking at a tight end at Baylor who weighs over 400 pounds.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That's insane. That's insane. So the guy's 6'8" and weighs 400 pounds.
If it was 275, I said it there on purpose. Karoma is the guy I would like to see catch a pass in the flat and then watch people try to tackle him as he probably punches them.
Yeah, he could be good. He could be good for that.
But if we're going to do 300, I'm going to go with 6'6", 320-pound Riker Matthews.
Yeah, he's who I would probably take, too.
But there are some other big guys that don't I've not seen play, so I don't know if they're athletic enough to do it, right?
What about Tooney Kanouche?
I don't know. What about him?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. That's kind of what I'm saying. I don't know. But I would not suspect to see anybody out there over 300 pounds playing a skill position this year for the Cougs.
No.
Sorry, Johnny Dangerman, or Dangeman. Sorry, am I messing up his? No, it's Dangerman. It's Dangerman.
No, but if you drop your threshold just a little bit, mm-hmm. What about like Kafusi as a tight end?
That's way down. He's like 265. That's what tight ends weigh.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
That's just, come on, man. You're stretching.
Okay, that's just people playing weird positions. This isn't Laquan McGowan.
Yes, no, it is not. No, it is not. So, Matt, it's time for, this is our first preview episode.
Uh-oh.
And we're talking defense. So let's start on the D-line, Matt. Let me paint a scenario for you. Okay.
Uh-oh.
Bronson Kafusi last year switched to linebacker. Despite the fact that a lot of people say it was a failure, he had a terrific statistical season. Matt, I'm going to just be real blunt here. Is this front three going to be able to generate pressure and give the defensive backfield the help it needs, or are we going to have to be crazy blitzing all the time?
I think they're going to be able to do it.
Okay. Okay. I was not expecting you to say that.
I really like Travis Tuiloma, and I like Bronson Kafusi.
Okay.
And I think if you get a couple of guys down in there that can make a little bit of noise, that's really all you need, right? You don't need three superstars. You just need a couple of guys that can eat up more than one blocker.
Okay. Yeah, right? That's absolutely correct.
And if you have a couple of guys that can do that, you're going to be able to scheme well enough to get Kafusi or somebody in the right situation to get into the backfield.
If you can do that, you can also bring a fourth blitzer rusher, one of the linebackers, and it can be effective. As opposed to last year, where a lot of times that fourth and even sometimes the fifth didn't do jack squat.
Right.
Because it was all one-on-one besides Kafusi. It was all one-on-one. So, Matt, last year, Bronson Kafusi had 7 sacks. He had 4 the year before and 4.5 the year before that. Last year, he had 11.5 tackles for loss. Over, under 7.5 sacks for Bronson Kafusi.
7.5 sacks?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to go with the over. Yeah.
I am also going to go with the over.
Crazy.
And crazy. We'll get to the linebackers here in a bit, but I think they're going to be much improved, which will force teams to sometimes leave Kaufusi one-on-one. And he's got the speed and athleticism to beat a lot of guys. And I still think they're going to move Kaufusi all over the field. I don't think you're going to see him lining up with his hand on the ground on the same side of the defense every play.
I agree with that.
That is just not how, with Bronco calling the plays and running the defense, he'll have Kaufusi standing up in the middle, on the edge, hand on the ground, hand up. He'll do a lot of different things. I agree with you. Over under 4.5 sacks for anyone else on the team.
I'm going to take the over.
Not named Bronson Kaufusi. Last year, the second place after the 7 sacks by Kaufusi was a tie, 3 sacks each for Taki Taki and Kaute. So I am going to take the over as well.
I think, and you know what? I'm going to go a little bit. I'm going to get crazy.
You're going to say who it is?
I think I am. I think it's going to be Warner.
Dang it, you just stole it. That's what I was going to say.
But you know what? Given if I'm right about Taki Taki, if he's in enough trouble that he doesn't come back, I think maybe we see a resurgence of Kaute.
Maybe.
You know, maybe we do. I don't know.
We'll see.
There's a lot of linebackers out there.
There's a lot of linebackers out there. A lot of linebackers. Okay, so let's move back to those linebackers, Matt. So Warner is... Okay, let's look at last year's tackle leaders, okay? Mm-hmm. Tackle leader was Sky Pove. That's not good. One of your defensive back. Your linebacker tackle leader, Zach Stout, gone. Craig Bills was third, and then Pakula was fourth. Who leads the team in tackles in 2015? Is it one of these linebackers?
I think it is.
Now, if a BYU defense works like it's supposed to work, a Bronco Mendenhall defense, it should be one of the middle linebackers, right?
It should be Longy.
It should be Longy. Should be that guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or if Pakula ends up beating him out and gets more playing time. Or do you think there's so much rotation with the linebackers that it ends up being one of the safeties, not because maybe things are going poorly, but because there's just nobody besides Warner plays enough snaps to lead the team in tackles?
Oh, that's tough. You know, if I go back to what I said a second, it was probably the other inside linebacker that should be the one that leads. But the... But coming back to your question here, you know, if it's linebacker by committee, then you probably get into that situation, and maybe that's what we end up with. Is they're right. Just rotating them through so much for fresh legs that you end up with with Nakua or somebody back there leading the team in tackles, by virtue of the fact that they're rotating around so much.
Yeah, the cat or the free safety. I think they will figure it out, and one of those middle linebackers leads the team in tackles. That's my prediction.
But it'd have to be whoever that person is going to have to consistently. They're going to have to consistently be playing
and consistently making tackles
all season.
They just got to eat people up, you know. So yeah, I think so. Matt, at the end of this year, are we going to feel differently about this linebacker core, or are we going to go into 2016 spring practice still going, well, it's Warner and everybody else? And by the way, saying Warner and everybody else, Warner, to be fair, has not yet proven it's Warner and everybody else, but I think that's what we're all assuming. Are we going to be saying, great, we know who the linebackers are next year, or are we going to be saying, here we go again?
I sure hope so. Yeah, I feel like we went through a couple of years with the defensive backfield like this, where we're like, we still really don't know what we have here.
Yeah.
And
I don't like it.
No, it's not good. And this feels a lot like that did.
Yes.
You know, it's like, I don't know, or is this because we've got so many guys that are good and ready to go, or is this because we don't have anybody who's good and ready to go? Is this Jake Heaps and Riley Nelson? You know, I sure hope not. But you know, I don't think it is. I think there is some talent here, and the cream will rise to the top in 2015.
So moving back a step, when Bill Connolly was on the defense. When Bill Connelly was on the defense. When Bill Connelly of SB Nation and Football Outsiders was on the podcast about a month ago, he said the advanced analytics do not show last year's BYU defensive backfield as being as poor as what fans think, that they were absolutely hammered because of the lack of a pass rush, which I think most of us would agree with, that they weren't terrible. I didn't think they were terrible.
The pass rush, the lack of pass rush killed the entire defense last
year.
Yes.
And also the inability for the linebackers to make plays beyond the obvious. So I actually think the defensive backfield will be fine. I don't think they'll be great. Now, whether they become great probably depends on if one of these safeties becomes something special. So Matt, who's the safety? At the end of the day, is Nacua or Badger playing that free safety role this year?
I feel like it's going to be Nacua because I think he's just nasty.
I have a feeling it's going to be Badger.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. Nacua has shown an inability to keep his head on his shoulders.
Yeah. And there's a part of me that really likes it.
I know you like that. But he's got to stay on the field. And the question is, we still don't know. He will be punished for the Beach Bowl brawl, right? We don't know when and how.
I think they've already taken care of it.
Oh, I don't think so. I think he sits against Nebraska. And so Badger gets a chance on a national stage. They're both juniors, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's switch to the other safety position. Takanaka seems like the favorite at this point, Matt. Do you think he ends up being the man?
It's going to be Takanaka.
Yeah, I agree with you.
There's some of these places on this depth chart where I'm a little bit unsure, but I think we can just go ahead and call this race right now.
Yes. So moving over to the cornerbacks, Prater will have one of the slots. The other slot, I'm not quite sure who it will be, Davis Hanneman, if he's healthy. At the end of the year, if I said this will be a better defensive backfield than what we had last year, agree or disagree?
I think that statistically, this defensive backfield will be better. I don't know how much better the talent is, but the rest of the defense is going to be better. I think this team's going to pass rush more effectively, and they're going to be able to put the defensive backfield in a better position to be successful.
Not have to cover.
Last year's defense did.
Yeah, not have to cover for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
What about if I said this statement? At the end of the year, we will be saying the defensive backfield was the strength of the defense.
I would be very surprised if that were the case.
What if I said that the defensive backfield will be above an above average college defensive backfield, top 40 even?
Maybe I might be able to get comfortable there, but I still feel like that's kind of iffy.
Yeah, I agree with you on both counts. They might be average, I think. It really depends if one of those safeties, Nacua, Badger, or Takanaka, becomes something really special. That may tip this to be, because I think Prater's pretty good, and Hanneman or Davis will be okay on the outside, but not great.
I think those guys are all serviceable.
Yes. I think if Nacua is what everybody thinks he might be, or if Takanaka's, who the coaches seem to absolutely adore, turns into that fierce cat safety that goes in and wreaks havoc, you know, both in the passing and running game, then you may have something that's a top 40 defensive backfield.
Yeah.
So, Matt, that's the defense. Let's overall say this. Last year, according to Football Outsiders, we've talked about these numbers before, they were a below-average defense. It was one of the worst defenses since Broncos been here. The stats are a little hard because of the pace that we play. But, Matt, can Bronco and his magical defensive skills make this, again, a top 40 or top 30 defensive unit?
I think so. And I think getting back to kind of the bread and butter of Kafusi, I think is really going to help.
Yes.
You know, it's just you were putting the wrong pieces in the wrong places last year.
Right.
And I think that I think you get over some of that this year by rotating things back to normal. And I also think you've got some guys in important positions that have a little bit more experience, have some more game time under their belt. And that's always helpful.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think you see a defense here that, while below average last year, becomes an above average defense in 2015.
This is something that Bill Connolly of SB Nation and some other analytical guys stress a lot. There is statistically you can see as both on offense and defense, but it's particularly true on defense and the offensive line. The more experience they get, typically that defensive is better. And we're going to have a linebacker core that is not as young, that has more experience, and some of these defensive backs have got a bunch of experience now too. I think this is a top 50 at least and has the upside of being a top 40 up towards 30 defense. I don't think this, we're not going to be sitting at the end of the year going, wow, this is one of the greatest defenses that Bronco Mendenhall's had.
But you know what? They don't need to be.
No,
they
don't.
If they can hit that upside that you just described, I think we have a top 20 football team.
You win 10 plus games if they do that, even with this schedule. The problem is, can they really do that? Is the talent, you know, these linebackers, at some point, you no longer can be, oh, well, Lange and Warner are top talents. They only end up being top talents in the end if they can actually deliver. So this is the time, Matt, less than 24 days to kick off.
Oh, so awesome.
Against the Cornhuskers. Now, Matt, we don't usually...
Oh, I need you for ball.
You're kind of pathetic. But then I think to myself, I feel the same way. Matt, we don't usually... This is an interesting question from... This is a non-fall camp question. We'll transition to our next thing here in a second. Andre Hutchins on Twitter, out of the tweet bag as well.
Tweet bag. I was looking for an Andre Hutchins sound. I was like, I don't think I have an Andre.
No, you don't.
Andrew Hutchins. I don't think I have an Andrew Hutchins sound.
It's Andrew.
Sorry, Andrew. I called him Andre. I don't know why I did that.
It is Andre. What are you talking about?
It's Andre Hutchins? Why am I calling him Andrew?
I don't know why you call him Andrew. You just insulted the Andre.
Like the one time you insulted that one guy and his entire family?
That I added that out, I'm sure. At AC underscore Hutchins, he says...
Up in
Boise for work, and he says the Boise State brand is everywhere, okay? He asks if BYU is doing a good enough job branding around Utah. Now, have you went to Utah this summer? No, you did not.
No, I did not. I did not make it to Utah this summer.
I did. He says, I know it's a hard question to answer if you don't live in Utah, but I was there this summer. But it's the same in Salt Lake where he lives, Utes brands everywhere. So, Matt, the question is, are they doing enough with the branding? Now, I'm a marketing guy, so I got a lot of opinions on this.
You have a lot of opinions on something?
It's strange, I know. It's rare, but it happens on occasion.
I'm going to go ahead and let you roll with this one, but all I'm going to throw in is Hutchins now has his own sound.
What is it?
It's going to be, sorry, Hutchins.
Sorry, Hutchins.
I'm going to apologize every time he comes up for calling him on Andrew.
Andrew. So here's my point. BYU is not a brand that is going to, quote-unquote, convert people. Okay,
did you really just use the word convert?
Yes, that was on purpose.
Really? Oh, okay, my gosh.
All right, fine.
Marketing
bad
terms
pun.
Gone wrong.
So it is they spend their marketing dollars on energizing a existing fan base as opposed to try to get casual fans energized. Does that make sense? Like if you live in Boise... You're part of the community. It's like a community thing, right? And Utah tries to do the same thing with Salt Lake County. And a lot of schools try to do that. BYU's brand is so different. It's kind of like Notre Dame. Like you're not going to see a bunch of signs in South Bend about Notre Dame. But they spend a lot of money on the East Coast and in the Midwest trying to get Catholic fans to root for Notre Dame. I think it's kind of similar. So I think they do a... plenty fine job. I actually think where they do a great job is on the Olympic sports, where you'll see signs for women's soccer and volleyball to try to get people in the community who maybe are BYU fans but not volleyball or soccer fans to come out and watch it. So,
but you know what? I look at that a little bit differently. So I think that in Utah County, there's a lot of casual BYU fans.
Sure.
You know, people, maybe they're just members of the church, or they went to BYU but aren't like super into sports. And I think they could do a little bit more to get those people more interested in BYU sports.
You know what gets people more interested in sports?
Winning games.
It has been proven in almost every sport. There are some exceptions, like the Chicago Cubs. There's a few college football teams that also draw.
Cubs.
And, what?
The Cubs.
But you know what I mean? Like, you win, people come. You lose, they don't. I mean, BYU right. basketball, I remember someone saying that BYU basketball fans were terrible in that year when they were like 1-20-something, right?
Yes.
No, oh, nobody goes to a team that's that terrible. People don't go. It's not fun. It's not enjoyable to root for. So you just stop going. And then when BYU got good again, of course, the Marriott Center's rocking.
But BYU fans are so fair weather.
All fan bases are fair weather except for the Cubs, and they just go to the games to drink beer.
Well, let's be honest. If you were a Cubs fan, you'd do the same thing.
Whoa. So anyway, Matt, we're going to close on something here. Non-alcohol or tea related, and
I don't know what to say.
No conversion puns either. What do you say at that point? We're out of things to say.
I have no material. If those things are off the table, I don't have any material.
Let's go with last week. We had Jay Yeomans on the program. He ranked, Matt, the top 100 defensive players in BYU history. It puts my old list building to shame. 100 players. So, Matt, let's just focus on the top five, okay? He's got Ron Wood, linebacker, 75-78. Kyle Morrell, defensive back, 81-84. Vannoy, linebacker, 2010-2013. If you don't know who that is, you should not be listening to this podcast. Just stop. Stop listening, and we're done. Don't ever listen again. Rob Morris, linebacker, 93, and then 96-99. And then Jason Buck, defensive tackle, 85-86. He won the Outland Trophy in 1986 and was an All-American. Matt, do you have any problems? Is anybody missing from this list? Would you have it in a slightly different order?
I might do it in a slightly different order.
Your beloved Shea Mearbrook only was at 13, which I think is actually a very fair ranking.
Oh, I think it's absurd.
Absurdly low.
He was the best ever.
Oh my! Stop it. He wasn't the best linebacker at BYU. He's not. He is top three, maybe.
He had intangibles.
Oh, stop!
That I don't
with the
think
intangibles.
Anybody else on that list had.
Oh my gosh! Stop. Vannoy didn't have the intangibles. Stop it.
Vannoy had skill and size that Mearbrook did not. And when you look at what Mearbrook did with what he had.
This isn't a pound-for-pound list. What are you talking about? This is ranking the players on the field today in a pick'em game. If you could
take Mearbrook because he could run the defense. It's like having a coach out on the field.
Oh, my gosh. You're killing me. You take Mearbrook over Vannoy?
He's my number one pick.
Oh, my gosh. You're so rational when it comes
and
to
you
that
know what? And you
96
know what?
Team.
And you know, if Mearbrook can hear you right now, he's going to come and find you, and he's going to hurt you.
Yeah, and you know who's going to protect me? The more athletic, bigger guy named Kyle Vannoy.
Vannoy's not coming for you.
Yeah, he is.
He's too busy in the NFL.
He's a good friend of mine.
He's really busy right now.
And I think Rob Morris was better than both of them.
Yeah, Rob Morris was
He was, and he was a young return missionary linebacker on that 96 team.
That's right.
Yeah,
you know, Rob Morris, from what I understand, in high school was a unstoppable running back.
Yeah, actually, my college roommate played against him in high school.
That's right.
It was a defensive lineman, and said he thought when we were at BYU, he thought BYU had made a mistake by not having him as running back. Of course, when he became an All-American linebacker, 147 tackles, 16 tackles for loss, 11 hurries, 6 sacks, and 4 pass breakups in his 1998 Defensive Player of the Year. Wow. Rob Morris. But Shea Mirbrick, I would have him as a top 10, top 15 guy. I mean, he's
a top 10 guy. Do I really think he's the best of all time? No, he is my favorite, though.
He is your favorite. He is your favorite. And my favorite defensive player of all time is probably, I was a massive Leon White fan as a kid. He was the linebacker that would then go on to play for the Bengals and the pros. Jay did a good job on the program last week saying that your pro play, though, was not on this list at all. This was just your collegiate play, which guys like Brett Kiesel didn't make the list, and he pointed out that he just didn't have the stats to make it on the top of this list, which is fair.
Well, Kiesel really blossomed as an NFL player.
Yes.
He peaked in the NFL.
Yes. And Morris, for example, peaked in college. But
terrible pro career, though.
No, not a terrible pro career. I mean, related to where he was drafted, probably disappointing, but certainly not terrible. One of my favorite pro stories, of course, is Chris Hoke, who came in at 98 on Jay Yeoman's list. We've talked about this before on the podcast, I think, is that he was second team all Mountain West and did not get drafted and ended up playing, what, for 10 years?
Yeah.
Played in some Super Bowls and was not a superstar, but a contributor on some Super Bowl teams.
He was a role player, and he was an important part of those defenses.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of interesting that... I don't ever remember thinking in my head when he was at BYU, thinking, wow, Chris Hoke, 10-year college career, right? Well, Matt, we've come to the end of our agenda. Anything you would like to share with the listeners before we sign off?
I think I'm good. I think I've said enough stupid stuff for one podcast.
I believe you have said enough stupid stuff for one podcast. I think you've hit your quota. Next week, we will be back with our preview of the other side of the ball, the offense. We will talk, of course, about Taysom, more about the running back situation, and hopefully we'll get some clarity as fall camp continues. Of course, as you follow the Cougars, check out all of the Cougar news you can find at CougarFan.com. Get all of from all the best sites and all the writers that cover the Cougars. Thank you for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars! Isn't that